Hello, who's calling?
Hi, sir. I'm Bo Peterson. I'm a reporter with Post and Courier with the Daily down in Charleston, South Carolina. Jim
hey,
McDonald
how you doing?
said I was going to give you a call.
Yeah, what can I do for you?
We've got a lady here trying to organize a Dorchester County grand jury. We got a press release from her, and we're just kind of trying to figure out what the whole thing is about. And she gave me contact on Mr. McDonald, and he said that you and a man talked to about this.
Yeah, I'm involved. There's quite a few people. There's a lot of people you can talk to. I'm one of many. There's a guy in Florida you can talk to also. But I act as a press agent when people want to get the right story out there. I can give you, the best. This is not a simple story, although it can be a simple story. And I'll take it right to the most simplicity, and then if you want questions, I'll try to do the best, or I'll give you reading material. But the bottom line is this, is as I'm sure you realize, we've got a lot of problems within our government. There's nothing wrong with our government. It's just that we have some, we call them progressives, that have taken over the government and taken us down strange roads far away from our Constitution. And in the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson wrote that we have government by the consent of the people. And there's quite a few people out here across the nation trying to figure out, well, how does the people give consent to their government? There was a United States Supreme Court ruling back in 1992. It's called United States versus Williams. And Anton Scalia, the United States Supreme Court, wrote the paper for the majority of the court. It was a 6-3 decision. Mm-hmm. And in that decision, he laid out the way that the people have the authority over the government through the juries. Outside of the courtroom, it's the grand jury where the government goes to get their consent. They can do nothing without getting the consent of the grand jury.
Right.
In other words, anything that they have to do concerning our security, concerning the people, they have to get the permission of the people in order to go forward with those things. And so the people of the grand jury are the people who answer those and give the solutions to the government. The second thing we discovered was that inside the courtroom, the state may be trying to prosecute someone, and if a grand jury indicts them, well, then they get the right to a trial jury. And that trial jury has the ability to nullify anything. They got jury nullifications, which means if they're being prosecuted for a law that shouldn't apply to this person's situation, or if the jury believes that the law is not constitutional, they have the authority and the ability to make a decision and nullify the law. Now, in today's juries, you have the juries controlled by the judge who say, you get to decide the facts, but I'll tell you what the law is, and you got to rule on the law. Well, they're bringing up statutes. It's called statutory courts, or what's called the Nisi Prius Court. And so those courts are not constitutional courts because it's being operated and run by the government, so it becomes a puppet court. Same thing with the grand juries. They're puppet grand juries. They work for the prosecutor and the courts. You must have heard the statement by prosecutors that they can prosecute a ham sandwich. So that's the authority we're acting under. We have reams and reams and reams of authority, but we really started discovering these things through that particular decision, United States versus Williams. Mm-hmm. Now, we do have a news release on the website. You can click on breaking news, or on the top bar, you can just click on the word news. You'll get to the same place,
okay. And
you'll see it's in chronological order. You can read from the beginning going up, or you can start from the top and just read the latest. One of the things we're doing here in New York is that we are writing letters to all the oath takers of New York to remind them of their oaths and to make them conscious of their oaths and what the Constitution is all about. Because the sheriffs, the judges, the clerks, the bailiffs, these are the gatekeepers. These are the oath takers. They are either, in our state, they're all elected, but sometimes they appoint them in different states. Mm-hmm. But these are elected or appointed positions. And they raise their hand to swear to protect and uphold the Constitution of the United States. And the sad problem is, when talking with these oath takers, is they don't know what their oath is all about. if you bring up a constitutional question to them, whether it be about the simple First Amendment or the Second Amendment or the more complex Fifth and Seventh Amendment or the Tenth Amendment, you know, they don't know what you're talking about, and they feel incompetent to answer. So what they do is they then go to the county attorney, which is a bar associate, and they ask them, and they're taught statute. So they give them a statutory answer, and that answer is the wrong answer. And so the problem is that they raise their hand to swear to protect and uphold the Constitution, and the question now is, did you lie? Because they don't know the Constitution, and how can they protect something they don't know? So we're trying to encourage them to take constitutional courses. They can get them right online. I mean, goodness, you could just watch them on videos. Read the Constitution, talk to the governor of the universe for understanding, and by God, step up and stand up for that Constitution and protect the people that you were sworn to protect. And so we got a campaign going on here in New York with all of these oath takers, and we just finished and posted our second letter to them, which was meant not only to address them, to inform them of who and what we are, but also to let them know that what the law is. And we lay it out with no uncertain terms and make it very clear upon the paper, line upon line. It cannot be debated. And the other side, they come claiming to be the authority. They call themselves professors. They call themselves attorneys, lawyers. They call themselves judges. And they interpret the law, but they never give you the source. We go right to the founding fathers. We go right to the people. We, the people who did establish and ordain this Constitution for the United States of America, that's the place where we go, and we show clearly the meanings of the words of the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Seventh Amendment, and so on.
Let me hold you up there if I could.
Yeah. I know it's complex. It's a hard story to write.
But I think I've got the gist of it now anyway. Understand you've indicted some officials in New York, including a few judges.
Yes.
What happens next now that you've indicted them?
Well, we have a serious problem here in New York. They know what the law is, and they're very silent, and they fear us, rightly so, because we're coming with justice. They fear us because they know the name of justice is right on their heels now. We're going after these people for RICO and for conspiracy to commit ultimately tyranny. High treason, when you go up against the king, and remember the experiment in America is we're all kings. You know, we have unalienable rights, and we have courts of record. We have the authority of the courts of record, which is common law courts.
What can you do with these indictments now that you have them?
Well, that's a process that's ongoing right now. We'll be visiting the sheriff probably in the next couple of weeks. You see, here's the big problem. We did some indictments. We indicted two of the highest ranked judges in New York State. And the reason why we indicted them, and there was two others, there was four judges involved. But what happened was that we were reconstituting common law grand juries in all the counties throughout New York. Presently, we have 49 counties that have been constituted, and by the end of this month, we already have scheduled for the final elections throughout the state, but by the end of this month, we will have all 62.
Yeah.
But what happened was is we filed our papers through the court system, through the proper process for memorial to let them know we're here, and then we went to get access to the buildings. Well, they denied us access into the buildings, and these high judges send out a memorandum to all the clerks to deny us access and also to return the paperwork. Now, they did deny us because they don't know what else to do, these clerks, and they're just clerks, but they don't understand their power and authority and that they're oath takers. And we remind them of that. That's why we're writing to them. And so the problem is that they're denying us access, but you can tell when we speak to most of them, they really love to see us come in. And what happens is that they don't send the papers back. We found every one of them, all of the court clerks kept the papers except one. And I know these people probably went into cardiac arrest, so to speak, when they realized what they'd done, because they did it through the mail, so they're facing 3 to 20 years in jail. So let me do it this way. They're facing 20 to 23 years in jail. for returning that paper through the mail. It was clearly the law, the statutes were laid out clearly on the paper, the filing paper. We filed it with what was called a file on demand, which is a process used by people who have problems filing papers and really just informs the individual that it is their duty to file these papers, and they have no judicial authorities, no tribunal authorities. They have to do their job. If there's a problem in it, the next step may catch it. The judge can't even refuse it. Actually, it's got to get into the court, and the hearing has to take place to try to reject it if it could be rejected.
If you don't get the sheriff to go along, if you don't get the court to open up to you, what recourse do you have, sir?
Well, we have a lot. There's law. We're running the process and the procedures, and we're doing it under common law. The first process, now these people don't know half of these things. They don't even remember what a writ of mandamus means, or a writ of they don't even acknowledge a writ of habeas corpus. They don't know. There's a lot of different writs that they do not understand, and they do not acknowledge, and they do not respond to. But nevertheless, they're procedures, and they have legal consequences, and the United States Supreme Court knows what they mean. I'm sure the appellate courts know what they mean, and I'm sure just the regular federal courts.
You plan to, as a grand jury, go to the other court, I guess I'd call it, and sue?
Well, no. I can take you to where we're at, and then I can tell you we have about maybe four different ways to go. And then there are other things to do after that to go through regular procedures. We won't reveal to the news what it is we're going to do next. We'll only reveal things as we do it because, first of all, I don't know what we're going to do until the grand jury convenes again and we bring the evidence before the grand jury and the possibilities of A, B, C, and D, and then they have to talk about it and make a decision and then let us know what they want to do. Right now, I'm part of the investigative body here in New York, and so that is my role, is to investigate, get information, and get it to the people, and they have to decide. These jury pools, and this is a very important thing to understand that I'm going to tell you right now, the jury pools of the people that we get pulling together are people. We are not creating a grand jury of 25 people that's going to sit and rule New York or to rule a county. That would be illegal, and that's a puppet grand jury. No, grand juries are pulled together for a case. They may be on that case for a long time until it's done, or they may be pulled together to decide on five cases in the course of a week, and then they go home. No grand jury should be sitting longer than a week unless they're on a case that requires, you know, a couple hours here, a day over there. It may take months to get through the investigative process and do what you have to do on one case because you have to maintain that one grand jury. The point is that this is not a couple of people. This is really the people. We will call people right out of the voters' ranks, and we don't care parties. This has nothing to do with parties. This is all about justice. And the process runs on principle. All the people are taught and orientated from us as jurists to come in with a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. And so that is what we're teaching the people. Those are the tools that people need in order to make a decision as a grand jurist or a trial jury.
Okay.
And, of course, there are a couple of maxims that they are ruled by. One being is in order for there to be a crime, there must be a victim. Corpus electi, okay? The second one is that for every injury, there must be a remedy. You know, court is not about putting people in jail, even if it's called a criminal act. For instance, if someone stole money off you or something or injured you, unless it's a violent act, that's a different story. But other than a violent act, someone going to court isn't about punishing them. Punishment comes with
let me hold you up there.
That's
way more than I'll be able to handle for a story.
Right.
And I'll be able to send people to your website to get that.
Right.
Thank you. Can I get spelling your names?
My name is John, and I can't give you my last name. And there's Dominic. He's also he's an investigative body out in California. What are you, Orange County, Dominic?
Orange County, Riverside.
Right. So, you know, we can't give you our last names because then if you went in to talk to the to try to get information on an investigated body of a grand jury in the courts, they will not give you the names.
Yes.
When a grand jury or a trial jury sits, they are nameless and they leave nameless. And that anonymity is extremely important to protect the person from being approached, number one, to be threatened, to be intimidated. So we have to protect the names of the people. And it's not about secrecy. It's not about, oh, these are freaky people, you know, because they'll try to make that point on the other side. But they have to do the same thing. We have to protect the people. And so after a case is over, if you were to approach one of the grand jurists, and whatever it is that they've been investigating is done, or whatever it is, if they're a trial jurist and it's done, they have the right and the opportunity, if they want to step up in the public, reveal their name, and tell their story. And if they don't want to, they don't have to. And that's the way our judicial system is set up, and it's extremely important to protect that covenant. Otherwise, we will not have grand juries or trial juries that'll have anything but being controlled by bullies.
I hear it. Sir, let me hold you up there. That's four
yes.
more than I'll be able to use.
Yeah,
John,
and I appreciate
John is J-O-H-N, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Look, I do appreciate your time, and if you want to, you know, read up for your own and maybe get a better gleam on this, there's two things you could do. The main thing is hitting that news page and at least read the articles which we're using to educate the oath takers. They're long, but they're memorandums. They're letters to the oath takers of New York, and hopefully the other states might do something similar to what we're doing. And you know, we all are focusing on one thing, and that's bringing justice back to our nation.
Okay.
Court by court.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate the call.
You take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.